Welcome to Factum Agri, dedicated to New Zealand's primary industry. Each week, I talk with farmers and growers, industry, the science community, and policymakers to hear their news and views on matters relevant to both our rural and our urban communities. Now, the government has announced it is suspending the requirement for councils to comply with the Significant Natural Areas, or SNAs, provisions of the National Policy Statement for Indigenous Biodiversity for 3 years, while it replaces the Resource Management Act. This will provide some relief for farmers in terms of compliance and costs of what many have called, including myself, a flawed and unworkable policy. With that being said, it does not detract from the good work farmers are doing under their own steam in terms of increasing native biodiversity and environmental gains. This week, the first in a two-part interview, I'm talking with Anthony Snodgrass from Koronikai Developments on his work with planting native trees on farms in the Upper North Island and what value they bring to not only the environment, but to the farmer. He is with me now. Hello, Anthony. Thank you for joining me today.
No problem. It's good to be here.
Please, can you tell me a bit about yourself and where you are based?
So I'm Anthony Snodgrass, and along with my brother, we're the owners of Koronikai Developments, and we're based in Te Awamutu in the Waikato.
You farm as well, is that right?
Well, my family owns a farm at Port Waikato, but that's now leased out.
Okay.
But my where our nursery and stuff's based is on 20 acres just out of Te Awamutu.
Yeah, cool.
So your mum's got a few cows, and we lease a bit of land off her for our nursery area. Yep.
So Koronikai Developments, what does this business primarily do?
We're mainly planting native trees, but that has quite a large associated jobs around it. So we do all our own site prep, plants and planting, actual putting them in the ground. Like in the spring, we're releasing. And then we do a lot of like maintenance on already established native areas.
Okay.
Pest weed control, people getting EBLs, like environmental titles. They need everything to be pest free. So going through and cutting and pasting and spraying and infill planting. And and then we grow all our own plants as well. So potting up. And so, sort of the whole area surrounding native planting, we do everything involved in that.
Fantastic. Native trees. So why should farmers be planting native trees in your mind?
There's lots of reasons, but the two biggest things for me are protecting our waterways. So riparian planting, which is like in the Waikato, it's like most rules are sort of a 5 meter setback from streams. So you sort of get three rows of plants in that, and so that sucks up nutrient runoff. And the biggest one and probably the quickest noticeable change to streams and drains is if you plant both sides, you're going to get shading, which is going to cool the water and provide a much better environment for koura and eels and stuff. Your stream health will greatly improve from cooling the stream.
Okay.
And then the other one would be like retiring unproductive bits of land. We see a lot of farmers who have got these swampy areas, and they'll put a tape around them, and they'll still be swampy or super steep stuff. That if you retire those, they're just getting better productivity out of their good areas, and they can better manage those good areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so retiring those areas, if it's a steep, rough area and it's not growing a lot of grass, like planting it up, you're going to minimize erosion.
Yep.
That silt runoff into streams and all that sort of stuff. And then swampy areas that shouldn't really be grazed, like they probably historically would have been a wetland.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the lungs and the kidneys of your farm. So planting them up, you're gonna filter a lot of runoff, and because they generally flow into drains and streams. So So planting them, yeah, it's going to A, stop going in there. But B, yeah, it's going to create a massive area for filter, and then it's going to create generally those are some quite bigger areas than rather than just a 5 meter setback on a stream. So then you're creating large areas for birds, like birds to live. And so like in the Waikato, well, where we are, there's a corridor project that runs from Mangatautra to Porongia, and they have, it's along the Mangapeko, so the whole stream, our whole goal is for the stream to be planted, but there's also these stepping stones. And so within those stepping stones, people are, they're trying to get people to plant large, like these larger wet areas and retire large areas than just the 5 meter setback on the stream to create areas for birds to travel between the two mountains. So yeah, with retiring wetland and stuff like that, you are creating larger areas for birds to live and increase biodiversity on farm and all that sort of thing. So that's sort of my two, but there's a host of smaller different things.
Yeah.
It makes your farm look nice and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
The two biggest ones for me.
Yeah, there's definitely some of those smaller things you talked about. There's an aesthetic value as well. 100% get that. And of course, I've actually spoken to quite a few farmers who have, you know, fenced off areas of native bush, and, you know, hearing things like tui return to the farm, which haven't been seen in a long, long time, has been quite rewarding for a lot of farmers.
Yeah, 100%. Like, farmers get a bit of a bad rap in the media, but like most farmers are pretty environmentally friendly people, and they love that, like they say, tui and kereru and all those sorts of things being on their farm. Yeah, and that's it. Like, sort of 3 years after planting, if you do a wetland and you've got a lot of flax, you're going to have a massive magnet for a tui to come and feed off the flowers and the nectar. So, yeah, they love that. And a lot of farmers want to sort of create a bit of, not like a legacy, like I call it a legacy, but it's not like, hey, I've done this. It's more of about just making the farm better than how they, like constant improvement type of thing. They want to make it better than how they either received it from their family or how they purchased it. You know, they want to.
Yeah.
So lots of farmers get quite a lot of enjoyment out of native planting, the ones that we work with anyway.
Yeah. Can you tell me a bit about your process? For example, if I were a farmer and I wanted to plant native trees, how would I go about it?
Yeah. So like this is the process we follow. So it has a few little extra steps in for like a commercial operation, but if you wanted to implement this yourself, then you'd definitely get a really good result. So the first thing we'd do is go and do a site visit, and so talk to the farmer about what they want to achieve, budget, if there's any funding that we could potentially help them with, all that sort of thing, and then just assess where the area is currently in what needs doing. So most areas, like on streams in the Waikato anyway, like convolvulus is really bad. So if they've been grazed right up the stream, generally the convolvulus is sort of being controlled, but once they get retired, the convolvulus takes off. So if things like convolvulus are there, we do a pre-spray.
Okay.
Or if there's blackberry, gorse, you know, if it's a steep area and it's growing weeds, then controlling the weeds before you plant is the easiest and most cost-effective time to do that. So assess that, talk to the farmer, what they want to achieve. Just talk about site prep. After the farmers push go on the planting, we'll drone map the property. So what that does for us is it provides a really high resolution map of the whole farm, and so we can accurately map the area. But it also like we load it into this app called Avenza Maps, and our staff can see that map and your little blue dot exactly where you are on the farm.
Okay.
And so for further down the process, if we're releasing and then they find a patch of blackberry, they can just take a screenshot on their phone and then put that in our software that we use for managing projects. And then when it's time to spray blackberry, like we can literally just walk straight back to that spot, spray that black. If that's the only patch, like we can just really efficiently deal with that.
Yeah, okay.
Or we can tell the farmer where it is. Yeah, so that we use that a lot, and then also a lot of farmers that we deal with are doing farming up or planting every year, and so we'll just constantly be updating this the drone map. And then they can just say, hey, I want to do this area. We can say that's X amount of plants. Right, let's implement that. And just it's just a real good planning tool. And then the farmers can get a PDF copy of it, and they can do what they like with it. But yeah, so it's, that's worked really well for us. Yeah, I've talked about site prep. So that can be anything from spraying the odd bit of gorse, convolvulus, to like, we've done a few jobs of like clearing full gullies of barberry. So yeah, we've got a lot of gear for that sort of thing, and all our staff are like chainsaw operators and spraying and site grow safe certified for that thing. So we can, yeah, we're set up to tackle any jobs. Generally then your fencing goes in.
Okay.
So most funding has a requirement for fencing. So I talked about a 5 meter setback from streams. Yeah, so 5 meters from streams, and then drains are like a 3 meter setback. But what I say to most farmers is the bigger, like the more rows you can get in a plant, it's going to create that density. Yeah, have more like more filtration for runoff and stuff. But like one row of plants next to a drain, it doesn't, like, you don't really get that effect of native bush. So generally, yeah, two rows is sort of a minimum. So your fencing goes in, and generally it's five wires to electric for most funders. So so we plant from May to September. So that's your when your moisture content in the ground is at its highest.
Yep.
So in April we'll start spot spraying. So go around spot spray at the required spacing. So for us it's generally 1.5 spacing,
okay.
meter spacing. And then so we have counters on our knapsacks when we're doing that, so we can get a really accurate count of how many trees are actually going to go in the area. And then at that time, we'll then do our plant mix. So a site can change quite a lot from seeing it in summer to even the end of winter. You know, like if we have a lot of rain, sites will flood, / the ground will get a lot wetter, all that sort of stuff. So we leave our plant mix as late as possible. And after we've spot sprayed, we've generally walked over the whole area, so we can get a really good feel for what plants are needed where. And so that spot spray is just done with glyphosate. We do it 6 weeks before planting.
Okay.
So that gives it time to brown off, but also the roots to rot, the grass roots to rot down. It makes planting a lot easier. And then there's just no competition for the plants to from grasses when you first put them in the ground. And so some farmers will area spray their whole area out with glyphosate. And that's, for us, we don't do that because we're trying to minimize the amount of chemical we do use.
Sure.
But also, if you just nuke a whole area, you just open up your soil for weeds to grow. And so like long rank grass is a really good barrier for weeds, but also it's a really good like holds the moisture in the ground, creates like a bit of a mulch.
Okay.
So as long as your grass isn't smothering the plant, it's sort of our friend. Like you're not going to have blackberry and gorse and stuff growing, whereas if you just look the whole area you are. So
yeah, so can that long rank grass also provide or work as a bit of a nursery for the young plants?
Yeah, 100%. Like, that's like it creates a little microclimate for the plant to grow in.
Yeah.
And what we find as well is, like we've had areas like right next to each other where it's been just been paddock, and then the farmers moved it back, and then a farmer's retired an area previously and just let it go to grass, and they're 50 metres from each other. And the area that's grazed out previously, like it's been spot sprayed stuff, the like things like hares will just go through areas that's really easy to travel through, and just it looks like they chop the stems off. It just looks like a machete just come through and like hacked off the plant.
Yeah.
Whereas in a long rank grass, like the hares it must just be too hard for them. They can't find the plants. It's just easier terrain to travel through. So yeah, your pest damage is less. Increases your moisture content is always really good. And it just creates a little microclimate for the plants to grow, as long as you keep the spot around the plants clear. So
yeah, sure.
Spot spray does that, and then glyphosate has no effect on, but there's no residual in the plant thing. So and it also sets up your we just walk a fence line for a start, and then rid out the area from that, and so it gets your plants like for further down the process releasing. It makes the plants really easy to find. Whereas because you gridded out the area at 1.5 spacing, whereas if you just randomly put them in, like releasing is a nightmare. And then plants and planting. So each site has a specific mix to what's needed at that site, which is going to like we're aiming for thriving, not surviving.
Yep.
So sites are tailored, like if it's a really wet area, it's going to have a lot of flax and cabbage trees and like sedges and native grasses to go in those wet areas, and then generally often have a little steep bank around there so you get more of your trees. So we aim for a lot of biodiversity within our mix, but different areas require different plants, so really important to put the right plant in the right place. Planting May to September, and then if I was a farmer just doing an area on my own, I would leave in the Waikato anyway. I would leave the your planting to sort of late July, early August. Just so like your plants are the biggest, they're going to be from in the nursery. They get far less frost, and they just straight away into growing rather than sort of surviving through the winter. So a lot of our projects that we plant late in the winter, they actually put on size a lot quicker than the stuff that we plant early in the winter. So if you're a farmer doing just one little project or one area, then I'd definitely wait till later in the season. In spring, your spring release is your most important release. You just get that spring flush of grass growth. And what happens is it grows up from outside the spot and actually falls in and then smothers the plant that way.
Okay.
And so going around, we're hand releasing around the plants and then spraying with a grass selective to control the grass. And the chemical that we use is haloxifop. We use haloxifop and then a simazine, which is like a mild broadleaf / residual. And then we use dye so we can see where we've been. And that will, if you sprayed it all over a cabbage tree or a flax, you would kill it. But if you get a little bit on any of the plants, it doesn't have an effect. So it's a very safe spray, and it does what we need to do. So that spring release is really important. And then any releasing further on, like we're generally, most of our projects, we do three releases over the first 18 months. So a spring release, an autumn release, and then if needed, another spring release.
Okay.
And the plants just sort of grow like 30 centimeters after you do that every time. They just got no competition and they just take off. And at the same time, we're looking for any blackberry, gorse, all that sort of thing, pest species that are going to regrow. and yeah, making a note of them. So and now when it's time to spray blackberry and gorse, we're going around and making sure we control those weeds before they get out of control. So ongoing weed control is important as well.
Now tune in next week to listen to the second part of the interview as Anthony dives a bit deeper into their operations, farmer engagement, and what place the pine tree has in this country's future. Have a great weekend. Thank you for listening, and catch you next time.